Hi folks, I am Alan Watt and this is Cutting Through the Matrix. He's talking to John from Alaska about the school system. Carry on, John.
Yes. In my journey to awakening to how they've been trying to create this world culture, I've come across UNESCO, its purpose and its philosophy, written by Julian Huxley. I'm sure you're probably familiar with that.
Yeah, I've read some of his stuff on the air, in fact, from his books, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, you can get this for free online if any of your listeners would like to look through this. But would you mind if I read a few of the quotes?
Sure. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. On page 57, it says here, it says, "Not much remains to be said in conclusion. But what remains is important. It is that the task before UNESCO is necessary, is opportune, and in spite of all multiplicity of detail, is single." And he says, that task is to help the emergence of a single world culture. That's on page 57.
That's right.
On page 13, he says, the moral for UNESCO is clear. The task laid upon it of promoting peace and security can never be wholly realized through the means assigned to its education, science, and culture. He says it must envisage some form of world political unity, whether through a single world government or otherwise, and he says, and the only certain means for avoiding war. And let me see. Now, closing here, he has an interesting, well, this is on page 21. He has an interesting reference to eugenics and how they were going to push eugenics through UNESCO.
Yeah.
And it says, thus, even though it is quite true that any radical eugenic policy will be for many years politically and psychologically impossible, it will be important for UNESCO to see that the eugenic problem is examined with the greatest care and that the public mind is informed of the issues at stake so that much that is now unthinkable may at least become thinkable.
That's right. And what he's talking about there was terminating children, sterilizing the ones that they would claim were inferior. Now, remember, too, UNESCO's United Nations, again, educational and scientific organization, he was the first CEO for it. He was also the top character who helped run the Margaret Sanger abortion clinics across the world. So he was for reducing the inferior quality types of peoples. So carry on. Yeah.
But yes, I mean, now UNESCO was also investigated in California for being charged with pushing internationalism. A lot of people aren't aware of that.
Yeah.
But there's the United Nations right there pushing internationalism and world government and a world culture. And from what I've seen, Alan, it seems like they're pushing this hip-hop style culture on the entire planet, because I'm up here in Alaska. And when I got here, I was astonished to see the Native Americans here with the sagging pants and the loud music and things like that, because I figured I was getting away from that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And but it seems like they're pushing that on the entire planet, and they're using that to dumb down the language, and they're using that to also break down the family.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. The content or the wording, I mean, when I can make the words they're actually saying, or mumbling, I should say, and that's intentional too, so the parents, they close their heads off, they don't listen, they can't hear it. It's intentional for the children to understand it, and as to bypass it, the parents, because if the parents knew some of the stuff they're actually chanting away there, it's pretty grotesque stuff, you know. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I just want to thank you for making me aware of how they push these things in entertainment and things like that, because, you know, the entertainment is, like you say, it's over a lot of people's heads. It's kind of under the radar, and a lot of people don't realize that they're being programmed under the threshold of consciousness through the entertainment.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing when you look into the little messages that they implant in, you know, this entertainment.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Years ago, the big boys decided to find ways to literally fix society in certain ways by getting scientific indoctrination, lifelong indoctrination, by using the media. And I touched on that yesterday with Julian Huxley's talks about UNESCO when he's on its purpose and its philosophy. And I gave a link for that too, so you can read it for yourselves. But some sites out there have them broken down into specific parts of his speech on its purpose, you see. Because it's very interesting to understand its purpose and its philosophy. Why did they want a controlled society? Now remember Huxley himself, Julian Huxley, was descended from Sir Thomas Huxley, who was the champion. He was called Darwin's bulldog. He was best pal of Charles Darwin, and he took over the theory of evolution and pushed it after Darwin had gone. And the Huxleys themselves are interrelated, if you go down through their family tree, with the Darwin family. And it's interesting to see how they all come together, all the big names that we're so used to hearing, and that are still taught at university, of course. But he said that UNESCO, which is Julian Huxley was the first CEO of UNESCO, United Nations Educational and Social and Scientific Organization. Social and scientific organization, that's a part you have to understand. Also can and should promote the growth of international contacts, international organizations, that's all your NGOs that the foundations fund, and actual international achievements, which will offer increasing resistance to the forces making for division and conflict. In particular, it can be both on its own and in close relation with other United Nations agencies such as the Food and Agricultural Organization. And you've got to look into these organizations. They're up there at the United Nations website and go through their histories and scour the internet for the old speeches given from these different parts of the United Nations. Because they mentioned food being used as a weapon. It's always been used as a weapon. Remember that. And they also said eventually at the Food and Agricultural Organization that all food in the world will be under the jurisdiction of the Food and Agricultural Organization, and they will distribute the food of the world to the different regions they will set up across the planet. And part of the reason for that, they said, would be to enforce the people to bring down their populations. They'll give you quotas, rations, if you like. And if you don't bring down your population to the desired level, then you won't get more food. In fact, they'll probably bring the quota down the following year to force you to deal with some really nasty stuff, like who you're going to kill. And then the World Health Organization, very Orwellian, the terminology they use, you understand, is to promote the international application of science to human welfare. Now, science to human welfare. Part of the human welfare is the fact that they said there's too many people. Too many people, you see, on the planet. They want to bring it down to a manageable level. Not just too many people, too many of the wrong kind of people, I should say. And they've actually said that. And so it says, as the benefits of such world-scale collaboration becomes plain, which will be speedily be the case in relation to the food and health of mankind, become increasingly more difficult for any nation to destroy them by resorting to isolationism or to war. So in other words, they want to set up a totalitarian regime worldwide, supposedly to stop any nation having a conflict with another. It sounds not bad, that part. And people go for that, especially young children, they go for that. That's okay, you know. Kiss and make up sort of thing. But you're under a bigger tyranny than ever before, because they mean it when they say to use the science, you know, application of science to human welfare. You understand how they define human welfare. What they mean by that. And further, since the world is in process of becoming one, the world is in process of becoming one. This was 1947. And since a major aim of UNESCO must be to help in the speedy and satisfactory realization of this process, UNESCO must pay special attention to international education. So they created the international education system to education as a function of a world society. That's the Norse propaganda indoctrination. They've already done it with an EU, the European Parliament. They've got a whole educational system for the European child now, where they've eliminated most of the history of the countries of Europe. Just like the communists did in some countries. Also did it in Cambodia. Remember, everything started when victory was achieved, and it was year one. Same with the EU. It's no coincidence. See, all these things are related to the one organization that creates them all. It says, in addition to its function in relation to national societies, to regional or religious or intellectual groups, or to local communities, every part of society is catered to, in other words. And it says, peace must be therefore founded, if it's not to fail, upon the intellectual and moral solidarity of mankind. Remember the solidarity movement in Poland? Actually, the word solidarity in this particular terminology was created in Scotland at Aberdeen University. It's been put big part, actually, of pushing the communist side of the Capcom system. Because you must have two sides. It actually mentions it here, in fact. It says, in addition, we must know much about the biological evolution and the existence of several types of selection, natural selection, the evolutionary conflict between the limitations set by an organism's nature and past history, and the requirement of the present and its solution by means of some new adjustment. And they're talking about adjusting all of you, folks. This last point immediately recalls the thesis and antithesis and synthesis of Hegelian philosophy and the Marxist reconciliation of opposites. That's what they called it. To get something going, you got to be controversial. You put something out there that upsets folk. They'll retaliate by refuting what you're saying and opposing it. And then, of course, you're both guided to have meetings, and you come to a synthesis where you both collude together and give up parts of your principles to create something new. It says, indeed, dialectical materialism was the first radical attempt at an evolutionary philosophy. Unfortunately, it was based too exclusively upon principles of social as against biological evolution. And that's what Aldous Huxley was prodding on about. And it says, a prior reasoning is inadequate to arrive at truth. Truth is never complete, and explanation is never fully or externally valid. So there can be no truth, he says. Hi, folks, I'm back. We're cutting through the matrix. Just going over some of the quotes really from Julian Huxley, who was a big player in setting up the system you're going through today, in fact, and what you've already come through in the past with the Cold War and so on. He talks about that, how necessary that was, in fact, for the whole movement towards globalism and world government would take place. It would need these factions to be really opposite each other on the way. And that's what he says. He said that he has to use the Hegelian dialectic and the dialectical materialism of Marx with his radical attempt at an evolutionary philosophy. And he says that the synthesis of Hegelian philosophy and the Marxist reconciliation of opposites based on it. Indeed, dialectical materialism was the first radical attempt at an evolutionary philosophy for change, you see. And he says, too, taking the techniques of persuasion and information and true propaganda that we've come to, but we've learned to apply nationally in war, where it's all lies, right? And deliberately bending them to the international tasks of peace, if necessary, utilizing them, as Lenin envisaged, to overcome the resistance of millions to desirable change. And again, who decides what desirable change is? Using drama to reveal reality and art as a method by which, in Sir Stephen Talent's works, truth becomes impressive and a living principle of action, and aiming to produce concerted effort, which, to quote Grierson once more, needs a background of faith and a sense of destiny. This must be a mass philosophy, a mass creed, and it can never be achieved without the use of the media and of mass communication. Mass communication. UNESCO and the press of its detailed work must never forget this enormous feat. And then he goes into the two tasks for mass media divisions of UNESCO. The one general, the other special. The special one is to enlist the press and the radio and the cinema to the fullest extent in the service of formal and adult education. He's not talking about two and two is four. He's talking through fiction as well. and in your entertainment channels and your history channels even, or science channels, because it mentions of science and learning, of art and culture. The general one is to see that these agencies are used both to contribute to mutual comprehension between nations and cultures and to promote the growth of a common outlook shared by all nations and cultures. So its real intention was to give you a common outlook, opinions on everything across the whole planet. Conclusion, the task before UNESCO is to help emergence of a single world culture with its own philosophy and background of ideas and with its own broad purpose. This is opportune since this is the first time in history that the scaffolding and the mechanisms for world unification have become available, and also the first time that man has had the means of laying a worldwide foundation for the minimum physical welfare of the entire human species. And it's necessary for the moment that two opposing philosophies of life, it is necessary for the moment, right? The two opposing philosophies of life, that was capitalism versus communism. It's necessary that they existed, confront each other from the West and from the East. So it was all, the whole Cold War was fake, except for the big boys in the armaments industry. Because they were in the governments too, they're allowed to tax you into the ground to protect you. As always, same old story. And what they were using your cash for was to go into real high-tech missiles, and also means of eventually controlling all of you by cameras and different techniques, and the computer as well. Because they planned on using the computer to bring you all together 50-odd years ago, at least. It says you may categorize the two philosophies as two super-nationalisms, or as individualism versus collectivism, or as American versus the Russian way of life, or as capital versus communism, or as Christianity versus Marxism. Can these opposites be reconciled, this antithesis be resolved in a higher synthesis? I believe not only that this can happen, but that through the inexorable dialectic of evolution, it must happen. In pursuing this aim, we must eschew dogma, whether it be theological dogma or Marxist dogma. East and West will not agree on a basis of the future if they merely hurl at each other the fixed ideas of the past. For that is what dogmas are, the crystallizations of some dominant system of thought of a particular epoch. A dogma may, of course, crystallize tried and valid experience, but if it be dogma, it does so in a way which is rigid, uncompromising, and intolerant. If we are to achieve progress, we must learn to uncrystallize our dogmas. In other words, be very, very flexible.
Julian Huxley mentioned, and what a sweetheart he was, this weirdo, as all of his kin were, by the way. But he set up UNESCO for the United Nations to create a common culture for the children. He also says it'd be good to bring something in, something akin to the Boy Scouts, he says. He admired this militarization of young people in uniform across the world. Many of the big boys did, because, you see, they're all part of the same Fabian organization. To bring in a world run by experts, and they knew they'd have backlashes from the general public who would not like their way of life being totally taken over and disrupted. And they wouldn't like being bossed around, so they had to make sure a tough generation would be in uniform for that era to do all the kicking around. That's why they gave them video games for 20 years. And those guys go right up there into uniform. Who are the heroes in these young people's eyes? The ones who win. The winners are the heroes. Who are the winners? The winners wear the black gear and have the guns and the badges and shoulder patches. They work for Big Brother, the boss. They're a fraternity. A fraternity. That's what the creator of the Boy Scouts said it would be, a fraternity, bonded together. Mr. Baden-Powell, Lord Baden-Powell, who saw this rising army across the world that would lead it into globalism. And where else did this originate but Great Britain, of course? Baden-Powell went to Oxford, where all the guys from Oxford were being trained into this global world system that they had started to create and that the US was to take over and complete. Baden-Powell loved uniforms. He loved Mussolini, because Mussolini, being Italian, had a very good fitted uniform. And he loved other fascists as well.
And the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, remember? Julian Huxley again. Revised and renamed its 2009 Comprehensive Sexuality Education, CSE document, pushing contraceptive-based sex ed in what the New American calls a full-blown assault on parental rights and traditional morality that could devastate a generation of young people. And people don't really see it as a war against a particular targeted group, but it is, to achieve a much, much bigger objective, and depopulation, of course, too, down the road, as we start dying off by not having children, etc. And the best way to do it is to hypersexualize everyone. As I say, they won't have a partner. They'll think nothing of abortion if they get pregnant for the girls. And it's promoted anyway, isn't it? And the state takes care of it, and the state in most countries pays for it. It all works along the right path because no one will actually want to have and raise children, except the elite themselves. It says here, despite objections of various member states, the International Technical Guidance on Sexuality Education takes UN abortion promotion a step further, indoctrinating children in pro-abortion, pro-homosexuality, pro-transgenderism and pro-fornication propaganda starting at age 5. And the critics said that these standards sexualize kindergarten children and advocate masturbation, abortion, gender confusion, homosexuality, homosexual parenting, contraception and premarital sex. And that's, again, is what they said many, many years ago. Everything they could promote, that would they don't care what it is, as long as they don't have children, if possible. And it actually works, of course, very, very well. Very emotive for most folk, they get, because they generally have sides, they jump on sides. But you just stand apart from all of it, and see the bigger picture. Who's pushing it? Not the ones they mentioned here, but the ones way above all. UNESCO, sure, but UNESCO's got its agenda for United Nations. And you don't forget who also set up the Department of Population in the United Nations. And again, that was, again, the Rockefeller Foundation who set that up. And they don't call it Department of Population Control anymore. They dropped the control bit, but it's the same organization. And it works with UNESCO, etc., etc., etc. Everything is all connected. It truly is. But the folk don't know. And no wonder they don't know. No one tells them, eh? Charles Darwin's, when he died, he became a sir, but Thomas Huxley was his champion and his bulldog, as they say. And, of course, he eventually spawned off more of the Huxleys, and then you end up with Julian, and you get Aldous Huxley as well. Julian Huxley mentioned that, in fact, to UNESCO, that there were different categories of management for the world, and there was a scientific management system who worked on behalf of the elite. The ones that Aldous Huxley mentioned is a dominant minority. Therefore, there's a dominant minority at the very top, and then there's an academic group of scientists beneath them who help manage it all for them, for those above. And the Huxleys, they said, basically were part of that management group, the scientific group. And Julian Huxley, remember, became important in different areas. He started off as a zoologist, and that was what a lot of them did. H.G. Wells' son was sent off to do the same thing, in fact. If you study how animals in the animal kingdom behave and different mammals behave, you can get an idea of what can be done to other mammals like humans. And that's all part of the game, of course. But Julian Huxley himself was a member again. Don't forget the Huxleys, like the Darwins, had a lot in common with the Malthusians. And Thomas Malthus also was a scaremonger of too many people eventually would be born, especially the wrong kind of people, as I said, at the working people, too many of them, and they would be overpopulated, and we'd run out of food and all kinds of things. That was a big, big scare thing in his day. And that, of course, was all part of the eugenic society that came along too. They copied the ideas of Malthus into evolution, and And they also believe in eugenics too, that the most favoured races should be encouraged to breed, and I mean classes as well. And that was part of the title, in fact, of Darwin's Origin of Species. It was actually to do with the most favoured races and so on and so on. But they made it quite clear in their writings, and Julian Huxley did too, that they could put money towards and an effort towards and teaching and breeding the right kind of people to rule everything and to start to diminish the supply of the lesser people. The father, actually the grandfather, Thomas Huxley, was more open about all of that as to how they should take down the populations of the unfit, basically, those with lesser mental skills. And that's never changed to this day. But don't forget that they create these kind of world leaders, and they also create their scientific elite that helps run it all, and then they put them into positions of power. When they created the United Nations, that was a great step forward for the control of the planet and the different departments they created. One was UNESCO, and the United Nations Educational and Scientific Group. And the whole thing, too, was to create a world culture. They put, I think it was Huxley himself was put in charge of it, Julian Huxley. He did some amazing speeches, very, very brazen speeches about it all, very pompous, naturally, in his arrogance. And he's also a founding member of Planned Parenthood, too. Again, like Sanger, quite blatant about the same idea that children of the unfit basically were just weeds and they should kind of mow them down a bit, keep them cropped. These guys are looked upon as heroes they are to those who control the world. And they try to get even the victims. Isn't amazing when you have abuse systems that they train the victim to actually praise the abuser? Quite amazing, isn't it? It works awfully well. And people will. They'll say, oh, they're great people, these great people. Yeah. Really? These great people, if they gave you an IQ test and looked at your backgrounds and your parental backgrounds and so on, your lineages, it would have you eliminated very quickly. Yes, they would. Yes, they would. They're also humanists too. They had nothing to do with morality in any kind of religious or natural humane system, although they call themselves humanists. Humanism is not humane. They might kill you off humanely in their terminology, but that's about as far as it goes with humaneness. But anyway, you find that, for instance, UNESCO's aims, according to Julian Huxley, he wrote quite a lot about it and was quite blatant about it too. And different ones too. J. Elmer Morgan was another worker for the National Education Association. He also was involved with it too. And they talk about a world police force getting formed, the World Bill of Rights and duties, etc., as a citizen, a global citizen. And then you'll find the same thing was backed up with everybody in UNESCO too. And I think the UNESCO put out the NEA's article called National Education in an International World. It's worth having a read through, because this Common Core is all part of that too, that came down the pike much, much later. And also too, you have the NEA editorial, The Teacher in World Government, by, as I say, J. Elmer Morgan, in the struggle to establish an adequate world government. The teacher can do much to prepare the hearts and minds of children. At the very top of all the agencies which will assure the coming of world government must stand the school, the teacher, and the organized professions. Now, don't forget, that's straight out of the same terminology statements too that made by Lenin and Stalin. Stalin said the same thing. You must pay the teachers well to educate that next crop of subjects. And they are subjects. And you must also pay the police well and the military well, because they keep them all in line and make them obey. And your civil servants too, of course.
The United Nations also came out of World War II, and it's not a little passive entity that sits and has meetings and complains about the poverty of the planet. That's how it's projected to the public. It's set up already to take over as at least the first type or form of world government. And as I said before, they always go for the youth. That's why another friend and relative of the Galton Darwins and and the rest of them, Huxley, etc., talked about the creation of an international education system, and that was Julian Huxley, the brother of Aldous Huxley. He was the first CEO of UNESCO, United Nations Educational Department, for creating a world culture through indoctrination of succeeding generations of children. As children grow up, they will follow that indoctrination up through their life, that will form their opinions for their life, and then they become obsolete in a sense, because they won't move from that particular set of imprints that are left in them, so therefore they go for the next generation and the next generation and the next generation, always progressing towards this ideal system they're bringing in. That ties in with an article I've just read today, in fact, from the United Nations, from their own website. It says Global Youth Culture by Richard Kahn and Douglas Kellner. Global youth culture is a transdisciplinary category by which theorists and policy analysts attempt to understand the emergence of the complex forms of hybrid culture and identity that increasingly occur amongst the youth throughout the world due to the proliferation of media like film. Now, remember, as I've said, the 1960s meeting to decide who would be given the task of creating the global culture. And here's the United Nations today saying this: of media like film, television, popular music, the internet, and other information and communication technologies in their everyday lives. While some measures of hybridity is a common aspect of culture generally, and the global exchange of products, people, culture, and identities has characterized all colonial histories, recent corporate globalization and the corresponding rise of so-called information society based on new media technologies has produced a particularly dynamic media culture. In this cultural matrix, global and local, as well as homogenizing and diversifying influences continuously merging the lifestyles, performance, and socio-political practices of contemporary youth. It's the last part that's important. Merging the lifestyles, meaning you're all copying the same kind of lifestyles that's projected mainly through fiction, performances, and socio-political practices of contemporary youth. Socio-political practices, what they believe in, what they can fight for or die for, and so on. It says here, youth defined alternatively as post-adolescent and pre-adult groups, or by the United Nations as over the 1.1 billion young people between the ages of 15 and 24, are perceived as a primary engine for the growth of global media culture. You see, the children are the primary engine. The growth of global media culture. Youth generally comprise the most media and technologically literate sector of their societies, and the multinational corporations that trade in global media commodities actively target young people as a consumer class now believed to be worth more than $2 trillion in potential sales. Now, it's not about sales in actuality. It's about the fact that using the system of commerce and the big international corporations, which are all interconnected, and they're all part as well of promoting a particular singular culture, which ties in exactly with the principles of the United Nations. They're telling you here that that's who they're targeting. The youngsters are the engine. And that's why they always go for them. Now, it says here, the global youth culture draws upon the Frankfurt School. You understand what the Frankfurt School was all about. And again, who funded all of that? And all the group that came out of the Frankfurt School. So the Frankfurt School's conception of culture industry, that in this updated context signifies the process by which industrialized mass-produced culture, and commercial imperatives drive global capitalism and attempt to legitimate its aims by integrating youth into the capitalist system by means of their involvement with new media technologies. Was it Al Gore said, no child left behind, they'd all have to get their computers? Why was it so important? Why was so much of the taxpayers' money put in to being sure that children across the planet would be divided and separate from the previous generation, because they'll be techno geeks, and their adult parents would be old-fashioned, obsolete beings that just fed them and gave them money. Divide and conquer, divide and conquer. You read this whole article for yourself as well. I'm just showing you how it all ties together, and nothing, but nothing, develops but on its own. Nothing at all.
From myself, Alan Ward, it's good night to me, your God or your gods go with you.